Butterflies would turn someday.
Now guys, I am not a really extremely social person, but back when I was and we were doing those networking things, there would be a time when people would, they knew what I was doing. And people, you know, would get to talking to me, and we'd be talking about what we're doing. And, you know, talking about what we do, and we'd talk about a conversation, and it'd be sounding thoughtful, calm, and reasonable, and talking, you know, about relationships, and someone would say, oh, okay, you work with people in relationships, yeah, respect, and conflict, and then they'd ask a question, you know, and it wouldn't come out loudly. It wouldn't come out angrily, just casual conversation, networking. And they would say something like, you know, but what if a man pushed a woman, what if a woman pushed a man, you know, too far, you know, and then they'd begin building a scenario. You know, what if she, you know, keyed his car? What if she, you know, slapped him? And finally, the question that they had been moving to all along: would it be understandable if he hit her? You know, I'm talking about under those conditions, they would say. Now people, some of us who've worked in domestic violence crisis spaces know that moment. Because the question is not really about that scenario they're talking to you about. The question is searching for something else entirely. The moment when violence becomes socially understandable and they are looking for validation from you. Anyway, most people, you know, they imagine abuse beginning with violence. They do. They think that the relationship is going along smoothly otherwise. And all of a sudden, out comes this, like a storm or something, right? A beautiful picnic day. And all of a sudden, out comes this slap or shove or a punch like thunder and lightning or something, right? But victims and survivors, they know something different. Violence almost never appears first. It arrives at the end of a long road, sometimes a short road, but a road. And that road often begins with something that looks like, it looked like affection, intense attention, compliments, maybe some gifts, promises, dinners, declarations that feel almost too good to be true now that you look back on it. And sometimes, you know, people call this love bombing these days. And it feels flattering. It feels like what we used to call courting. It feels like that. And someone who seems completely devoted to you. Someone who says you are the most important person in their world and they ain't never felt like this before. But over time, something shifts. The devotion becomes pressure. Compliments become expectation. The warmth becomes volatility. You begin to notice things. Silence used as punishment, pouting almost. Criticism disguised as humor. Emotional blackmail. Long conversations where you just end up apologizing for things you did not do. You just want it over. And, you know, everything just like the seasons just changed around you. Gosh. You begin walking carefully, watching your tone, choosing your words more carefully, because you just don't want You don't want anything to go down. And you're trying not to trigger that next explosion, the next storm. And this pattern is difficult for outsiders to recognize. Because each moment, it seems small. It seemed like nobody would go off because their dinner was not made to their liking. Nobody could possibly go off like that because their dinner wasn't made to their liking, but here we are. Each incident can be explained away, each apology. It seems sincere. It does seem like it will never happen again because to you, it's unbelievable that it went that far to begin with. Surely it wouldn't happen again. So when you meet victims and survivors and they try to describe to you what is happening, they do often struggle because it's really unbelievable. Not because they don't understand, but because all of it is very complicated and complex. And this is where the hypothetical question enters. Here it comes. Someone asked, well, what if a woman pushed a man too far, quote unquote? What that question is really doing is something very specific. It's trying to move the conversation away from all of these complicated dynamics of abuse that you hear survivors and victims talk about, that you hear prevention professionals talk about, that you hear domestic violence professionals talk about. It wants to get away from all that. It doesn't want to talk about power and control. They don't want to talk about abuse dynamics. They don't want to talk about coercion. And we don't want y'all talking about that. We don't want y'all talking about emotional abuse and all that. No. Get to the single moment, because that's a moment everyone recognizes. The moment where someone loses their temper, and we all understand that. Man, we were all toddlers. We understand that. The moment where the violence goes down. Because once the story reaches that point, the conversation changes. People begin asking a different set of questions. Well, wait a minute. Oh, wait, was he provoked? Wait, was he under stress? Wait, did she push him too far? Wait, was it just a moment? Wait, was it understandable? I mean, like people, literally, like, you think these people are toddlers. And suddenly, the entire pattern disappears. The love bombing, the coercion, the emotional abuse, the emotional blackmail, the volatility. Nobody wants to hear any of that anymore. The walking on eggshells, the silencing, the why didn't you leave? I was afraid to, I couldn't even breathe in the doggone house, she'll say. He's coming to my job. Yeah, my coworker's afraid. No one wants to hear that anymore. They only now understand one thing. The moment that the violence occurred and that person was angry, and everybody boils it down to that moment. That's it. And as you'll see across when you have conversations with folks, folks do a lot of things like that. It all comes down to a single moment. And not anything around it. There's a reason people search for hypothetical scenarios like this. And that's because society has a place where understanding often lives. It's a place, like, if you think about it, it's like a place where we all meet, like on a field. Like, remember when you have a drill in school? And you all agreed, okay, we're going to meet, at least our school did. We all had a designated place we would meet outside of the school. It was usually like somewhere on the field, somewhere like the playing field or, you know, somewhere out there, you know, a designated space we would meet outside of school. Well, that's kind of what this is. Society generally, usually on many, many issues, has a designated space where everybody meets on issues. You try to move people, and it shifts a little bit. Man. But generally, we all have spaces where our understanding lives. And so, there, you know, a place where people say, in this case, well, anyone might lose their temper. And that's where people are. That's just where people are. So once violence is framed as a moment of temper, of they lost their temper, there's something critical that happens. The energy shifts. The person who hit the woman is no longer seen as someone responsible for a pattern. Now, walk with me a little bit. Now, if they've got certain things that protect them, like they're okay, that you're going to have to put in certain factors. Now, if they're an entertainer, race, socioeconomics, what's their job, you know, da 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 da. Those things factor in. But you get me, in general. They become someone who simply had a bad moment. A moment anyone might have reacted that way. And that's how people describe it. I would have done that. I think I would have responded that way. And in that framing, sympathy begins to shift away from the person who was harmed to, you know, explanation, justification. And eventually people just want forgiveness so we can be done with this. That's it. That's it. People who spend years listening to, you know, all of these, you know, all of this stuff, they eventually move on. And they know where this conversation, all these hypotheticals, they know what people are trying to get to. You just want to find that magic space. You're trying to find what makes society say it is understandable to hit a woman. It is understandable for a male to hit a woman under the following conditions. You just want permission. You just want social permission. That's it. That's what they're looking for. They want to know, where is the point where violence becomes forgivable? Where responsibility becomes forgivable? Where abuse becomes simply a moment of, I lost my temper, not I abused this person. Violence rarely begins with the hit. It begins the moment society starts searching for reasons to excuse it. We are learning to recognize harm earlier, not after the damage is done. But while the warning signs are still whispers, we are becoming a society that pays attention to patterns, not just the final moment everyone can see. We are learning that dignity is not conditional. We are choosing courage over convenience. It is easier to excuse harm than to confront it, but we are choosing better. We are learning to hear survivors without turning their stories into debates. We are becoming a society that values calm strength over explosive anger. We are teaching our children that respect is not proven through control over other people. We are remembering something ancient and simple. Power is not the ability to hurt someone. We are building communities where accountability is not feared. It is welcomed as the beginning of healing. We are becoming the kind of society where no one needs to search for reasons to excuse violence. And with every honest conversation, every boundary spoken, every person who chooses restraint, we move one step closer to that world. Thanks for listening.
This is Tanya GJ Prince. Thanks for listening. Y'all be great.